I'm Andy Robbins, and we're speaking with Thomas Norman DeWolf and Sharon Leslie Morgan. They're the authors of the book Gather at the Table, The Healing Journey of a Daughter of Slavery and a Son of the Slave Trade. They'll be speaking in Kalamazoo this Sunday, November 11th, in a program organized in part by the Southwest Michigan Black Heritage Society. With me in the studio are Donna Odom, the executive director of the society, and WMUK Morning Edition host Earlene McMichael, who's also a member of the Race Initiative Book Club sponsored by the society. Tom, tell us how the journey started that's your book is about. How and why did it get started?
I'm descended from the largest slave trading dynasty in U.S. history. I wrote about several relatives and I who retraced the triangle slave trade route from this country to Ghana and West Africa and to Cuba, where the family owned sugar and coffee plantations. This family was involved in the slave trade for approximately 50 years in the late 1700s, early 1800s. Three generations of the family were responsible for bringing roughly 10,000 African people from West Africa into North and South America and the Caribbean islands and you know, into forced enslavement. And at the end of that journey and writing my first book, the biggest question that came up for me is, what's next? What do you do once you have this information that you never learned in school, information about just how huge slavery and the slave trade was to the economy of this country that's not taught in history books? And encountered a group called Coming to the Table that was started at the Center for Justice and Peace Building at Eastern Mennonite University in Harrisonburg, Virginia, bringing together descendants of the enslaved and descendants of the enslavers to look at this historic traumatic wound as a wound that has never been healed in this country and what we can do about it. And this group was formed to create and live a model of healing that acknowledges and seeks to heal these persistent wounds that continue to impact us in this nation today. And Sharon and I met as a result of a week-long class that was being offered at the Summer Peace Building Institute there in Virginia. And that was about 3.5 years ago, and it was about a year after that that she and I decided, why don't we, as two people, a black woman and a white man, commit to living this model together and see how it works for two people and what implications that might have for other individuals and groups as people seek to undo the damage that still continues to wreak so much havoc on us, whether it's in politics or our encounters with other people that are different from us in whatever ways.
Tom, this is Earlene. It was a bold step that you took to forge this friendship with Sharon over the course of 3 years. What advice do you have for individuals seeking genuine, authentic friendships outside their race? I know in the book you talked about a painful story of a black classmate that you thought was a friend and actually found out that he didn't think that that was the case. But what advice can you give to others?
I'll speak just for myself as a white man. And so my first thought for white people is that we need to do a much better job of educating ourselves, listening to the voices of other people that are not like us, that weren't raised the way I was raised. And, you know, it's not a matter of just jumping out there and, you know, as a white guy going out and finding my first black friend. It's really learning more about the things that I've never known about, that I was never taught, that I've been ignorant of, and trying to see things from the perspective of the other person. And that is the first and the biggest step. There are several others that we outline in the book, but really it's understanding, acknowledging, and committing to walk differently in life and to impact the world in ways that will make this difference.
In the book, you talk about it's important that the races are truthful with one another. And I know that you all were very truthful with one another in writing the book, and we appreciate that authenticity that you had. But you conclude the book by saying that you feel more pessimistic than you began, recognizing, quote, how deeply embedded systems of oppression remain. What I want to ask you is, What are some first important steps that we can do to foster racial reconciliation?
The first is recognizing, acknowledging, understanding, learning about the whole truth of our nation's history. That's the first biggest step, is not whitewashing things, not just focusing on the good parts. Recognizing the good parts, celebrating the good parts, but acknowledging, you know, there's other parts that are part of us too. Not everything about me as an individual is wonderful. Not everything about this nation has been wonderful. So the acknowledgement is first. Another step is connecting with other people. Once you've made this huge step of education and acknowledgement, is then connecting with people who are different from you, learning from them, listening to them, paying attention to what life is like from that different perspective. And then the next step is really working towards healing yourself, doing your best on helping to heal others, helping to work towards reconciliation, work toward using things like the arts, ritual. It may be within a community of faith or in other types of communities, but working towards healing in whatever contexts your life walks you through. And then the fourth and I think most important step ultimately is then taking actions in your life, in your community, in the systems that you can impact to make changes to those systems so that they are truly just, truly equitable, that work well for all people and don't benefit one person over another because they're white instead of black, male instead of female, Christian instead of non-Christian, able-bodied instead of, you know, carrying a disability. All of these inequitable things carry so many similarities in their injustice. But those are really the four steps that are involved in the process.
Good afternoon.
Hi, Sharon. This is Andy Robbins at WMUK.
Well, it's nice to meet you.
Yeah, it's nice to meet you also. What has the journey with Tom been like for you? In the book, Gather at the Table, we get the impression that there have been a few speed bumps along the way.
Well, I mean, anytime you try to go a long distance in a car, locked up with someone that you don't really know very well, it can be, or even somebody that you do know well, it can be a trial. So, yes, we had a few times when there were difficulties. I think that being in that close confines gives you an environment where you can't get away from having conversations. So we talked about a lot of hard things on our way from one difficult place to another. And but we made a commitment that we weren't ever going to have any fatal arguments, or we weren't going to ever have things that would turn us away from the table. So that helped us along the way. So we might have had hard discussions, but it didn't end the relationship.
Hi, Sharon. This is Earlene. At the end of the book, you conclude that in general, as an African American, that you feel that you cannot reach white people when it comes to racial healing. There's a quote that you have, "I can't teach them or convince them or have any impact because they won't listen to me. They are more likely to listen to Tom because he personifies that which is familiar." What I would ask is, what role then can African Americans play in the important work of racial healing?
I think that the first thing that we can do, we tend to talk about race a lot amongst ourselves, and I don't know that we always do that in a productive way. Instead of talking about, like in my family, we used to talk about it, but not offer any solutions. So it's kind of like, it's one thing to keep beating this horse, it's another thing to do it in a way that's actually going to achieve some action. When people start making that conversation have a result rather than just chit-chat, I think that's a big step. I also think, I'm not trying to say that I don't have any role at all. I think that it's important that both sides, both black people must listen to white people and white people must listen to black people. But I think that white people have more work to do in having conversations that they have never entertained before, unlike the way that we do. So I think that whatever I can do to encourage that and to, you know, to help propel that so that they do start talking about it and talking about it publicly, I hope is going to be helpful.
In the book, you all talk about being, you know, truthful with one another, and obviously you and Tom did that. And at the end of the book, you talk about how you've kind of stretched yourself, even in your neighborhood, and talking more to white people. But still, you say that topics of consequence is kind of tough to still have. But here's what I want to ask, and I ask this of Tom. What advice do you have for those seeking genuine, authentic friendships outside their race? What is it that, as an African-American, that you might want others outside your race to know, to have an authentic relationship with you and with others outside their race?
The big part is seeing me as a person. I have next door neighbors in the town that I live in, and we have gotten to be very friendly. But we do avoid certain conversations because I think there is still this discomfort about how different we might be, or, you know, how we might not, we don't want to have a conversation that will end up with us disagreeing on something. So I think that letting your guard down and being able to entertain those conversations anyway, I'm a work in progress. I have a long way to go. But when I get back home, I'm going to have some different conversations. We had an experience today with some school kids that was like, I really got to open up my mind more. And I think that if you don't approach these things with apprehension, that it's possible for them to be much more beneficial conversations.
Yeah, I think that all of the points, this is Donna, and I think that all of the points that Tom and Sharon are making really fit into what we're going to try to do here in Kalamazoo. The two things that I'm picking up from what they're saying is really acknowledging what has happened in the past. As an historical society, that is definitely what we see our role as, is to help people to see the real story and to help them acknowledge what went on in the past. And then that's our next step. We want to move on to where we can help people connect through the activities that we're planning in our 2-year racial healing initiatives. And hopefully the smaller groups that we have, the individuals we work with, the groups we work with, will be able to move on from that to real action and community transformation, we hope.
Because I think the point is getting it out. We haven't talked about this in a way that's going to have a good end result or have any end result. I think that we have to... confronting the issue, these things happened. There's no doubt about it. They did. And you can't keep sweeping it under the rug and saying that it didn't. And a lot of the things that happened make people angry, make me angry. As a genealogist, every slave name in my family that I come up with, I have a surge of anger and of hurt. But I can't deny that and say that it doesn't exist. I think that I have to talk about it, but I have to talk about it in a productive way, in a way that is going to make a difference, in a way that is going to change things, and not just speak out of anger and just let that be it. It has to be something. It has a follow-on action, because I'm doing this because I want this society to change.
Do you think that American society is ever going to get to that promised land that Reverend King wanted to see, where we judge people by the content of their character, not the color of their skin?
I really hope so. I can't make a prognosis exactly, but I can say that I'm going to do everything that I can do to help that happen. And I know that Tom will, and I know that there are a lot of people that are doing that and that want that to be. And if there are enough of us, it will happen. And I pray that that will be so.
Sharon, here's my final question. What things did you all see along the way in your 3-year journey together that gives you hope regarding racial reconciliation? Is there anything that's working? What kinds of approaches and strategies are working?
Two of the biggest things, one of them is that at a lot of the institutions that we visited, when we went to museums and historic sites, the National Park Service sites, people are articulating the history in a new way. You're not just going and seeing something and interpreting it for yourself. There are enablers that are giving you enough information so you can think about what really happened. So when you go to the Edmund Pettus Bridge, there's a multimedia display, and there's a person who actually was in the march that talks about it, and I think that personalizes the history for you, and it makes it more meaningful. It makes it more of a learning experience. At the Rosa Parks Museum in Montgomery, Alabama, there's this really awesome technologically advanced display where you get on a bus and you travel back into the past. And it would give a young person who has never experienced the civil rights struggle a very up-close and personal look at how things were, because it feels like you've really gone back into the past. So I think that things like that are a big deal. The other is that talking to young people and the things that they are saying, they do recognize that we are not in a post-racial society, and they do see very clearly how race is affecting their own lives, but they seem pretty determined that it's not going to be this way from now on. They really want to make a change. So I think that there's a lot of hope in that.
I just wanted to pick up, Sharon, on one of the things you were talking about. That was the anger thing. We had a panel here recently, and two of the things that we brought up. One is that we see black people as angry, and the other is that we see white people as guilty. And what I brought to the crowd was that, when we look at our history and we see what happened when the slave trade actually turned racial, that was a turning point in our history. And from then on, it was building on that, the whole idea of making black people seem like the other and separating the races in those ways to the benefit of those who were running the slave trade and those who had the power in the South and in the North as well. And what I wanted the crowd to see was that I think we all ought to be angry. No, I mean, this is something that has become a part of all of our psyche, and we're born into it. It's kind of hard to get rid of it now because, everything is teaching us that. Yeah, it's ingrained. And so I think we should all be angry about that because we've lost so much as a country because of what has happened. And we all need to acknowledge it, be unhappy about it, and decide together to do something about it.
Right. There's a quotation from Gloria Steinem that says, "The truth will set you free, but first it'll piss you off." And I think that's the use of that anger. It's like if you get angry enough, you'll change something. African Americans got angry enough, and enough white people and others got angry enough during the civil rights movement to get out there and march and do something, and they changed this society. And things are better and different in many ways because they did that. And I view this as the next step. So, yes, I think first you get angry and then you get over.
Donna, your group, the Southwest Michigan Black Heritage Society, is among those who are bringing Mr. DeWolf and Ms. Morgan in to talk about what we've just been talking about. Why did you decide it and the group decide that it was important to do that, to bring them in to give this presentation to the community?
Well, first, Tom was here in 2010 talking about his book, Inheriting the Trade, which gave the story of his family background, and the fact that they were the largest slaveholding family in the country at that time. And I knew that he was going to be writing a book with Sharon. And when I found out the topic, then I felt that we wanted to bring him back. We wanted to bring him back with Sharon, and we wanted to continue some of the work that we had begun with the Race Exhibit Initiative here. We were a part of that, and some of the other organizations that are working with us were a part of that. And we had committed at that time to continue that work, and we feel that this is a wonderful vehicle using their example and basing this on the healing historical harms doctrine, that the four steps, learning the history, healing, connecting, and action. And this Gather at the Table is going to be the kickoff of that two-year initiative.
This event is going to be this Sunday, the 11th of November, at the Light Fine Arts Building at Kalamazoo College. What are some of the next steps in that two-year process that you just mentioned?
Okay. We have a few components. One of them is to continue with panel discussions, the kind of panel discussion that we had recently on understanding race, because we want that first step, the step of getting the history out, learning the history, to be the basis for this. And so we will do events that will provide that for the community. And then we want to move on to the connecting, and that will be through our retreats. There'll be full day and half day retreats where we give people the opportunity to connect, to have dialogue, to have open and honest dialogue, and to begin to form alliances that can maybe put together a representative group to move towards healing and action.
Is the event open to the public?
Yes, it is. And open to the public.
What do you hope that they will get out of this? Who do you hope will come out to this?
We hope that all of the public will come out, and we hope that what they will get out of it is a desire to learn more, to become more involved, and to be a part of that alliance that I spoke of that will be a representative group for the community.
Will the book be available for sale?
The book will be available for sale, and they will be signing as well.
Speaking of books and follow-up, associated with your two-year racial healing initiative, there is a book club that kind of formed out of the race exhibit that was here at the Kalamazoo Valley Museum and started to meet to keep that discussion going. So if people are interested in this topic of racial healing, can you tell us a little bit about the book club?
The book club, we have tried to make very comfortable for people. In other words, not only is it a comfortable environment to have that kind of dialogue, but we also want to make it something that people feel like they don't have to be obligated to come to. So we make it so that even if you haven't read the book, you can come to our book club meeting. We use the books that we're reading as a vehicle for conversation. We only meet every other month, and we try to keep it so that the members are people in the community who are caring about this subject, who really want to build alliances and build connections. So we think that the people who have been coming, the core group that we have, is very involved. And we're bringing in new people all the time, and we're hoping that we can continue to build in the community and provide the information. That's what we're doing with the book club, is providing not only a chance to talk, but also some information through the books that we're reading.
If someone's interested in joining the book group, how do they do that?
Our next meeting is November 15th. It's going to be at Kazoo Books on Parkview Avenue in Kalamazoo. It's at 6:30, and they just have to show up. And the next book that we're reading is actually Gather at the Table. So if you're out at the event on Sunday, you can pick up the book, and you can come to our meeting a few days later.
Speaking of Gather at the Table, that idea of bringing different races together, are you seeing that actually happening at the book club?
Yes, very much so. We have a very mixed group, and we've formed very good friendships. We're meeting, in twos and threes outside of the book club because of the fact that we met there. And I think that we are feeling like we are bringing people together who might not have met in other ways.
We've been speaking with Donna Odom, the executive director of the Southwest Michigan Black Heritage Society, and with me, my colleague Earlene McMichael of WMUK. Thanks so much for listening, and thanks for being with us.